Hello, good morning. It's Wednesday, May 13th, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier in Tel Aviv. President Trump has accused Iranian Kurds of stealing weapons that were destined for opposition groups in Tehran. Today's guest tells me Kurds were badly burned by a US betrayal in Syria, and they now refuse to be sacrificed in Iran. Hear my conversation with Kurdish activist and expert on jihadist groups Aram Akil in a moment. But first, the headlines. President Trump is due to arrive in China for the first visit to Beijing by a sitting American president in almost a decade. Trump seeks China's assistance in forcing Tehran to open the Strait of Hormuz. Beijing is the biggest buyer of Iranian oil, but analysts say it's unlikely to take a direct role in mediation. Oil prices have fallen even as peace talks remain gridlocked. It's official. Israel and Saudi Arabia have been fighting on the same side. Reuters reports that Riyadh carried out direct airstrikes on Iran for the first time in March. It was retaliation for Iranian missile and drone attacks on the kingdom, but that quickly gave way to intense diplomacy and a de-escalation agreement. Hamas continues to make life intolerable for civilians in Gaza. Terrorists have been blocking Palestinian contractors from reaching a UAE-funded reconstruction site in Rafah. Workers were threatened at gunpoint, holding up one of the first major rebuilding efforts inside Gaza since the ceasefire began. The project, known as Emirate City, was meant to house tens of thousands of people who are currently living in tents. The IDF has been pounding Hezbollah positions in southern Lebanon, striking some 40 sites, including rocket launchers. Citing Israeli military sources, the outlet Walla today reports on what it describes as an emergency Hezbollah plan. It says the group, that has been weakened by shrinking Iranian funding and growing hostility from parts of the Lebanese public, considers a move to seize control of Beirut and sideline factions that seek to normalize with Israel. US Jewish groups are planning to protest outside the offices of the New York Times on Thursday. It follows an op-ed which accuses Israeli forces of raping Palestinian detainees. Israel has called the piece libelous. It relies on sources tied to Hamas. Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says his comments were mischaracterized, and some have questioned the timing of the piece, which came just one day before the findings of a major investigation into Hamas rape and sexual torture on October 7th was made public. Israel is through to the final of Eurovision. In Vienna last night, Noam Betan belted out a flawless rendition of his multilingual hit Michelle. He ignored the jeers to focus on the fans who were there to support him. Spain, Slovenia, Iceland, Ireland, and the Netherlands tried but failed to have Israel booted out of the competition. They've chosen to stay home instead. As they say in French, quel dommage. Well, before we get to today's conversation, a reminder that you can sponsor the Misgav Daily Brief. Just contact us at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now, here's Aram Akil. Let's jump straight in with President Trump's allegations. Did Iranian Kurds steal from America?
I will speak very openly, without political correctness, much like Trump himself speaks. First of all, when Trump says the Kurds, what exactly does he mean? We are a nation of more than 40 million people. Which Kurds does he mean? Which political party? Which military force? Which movement? And even if we assume that weapons were handed over to the Kurdish forces at some point, tell me one historical example where the Kurds turned against the United States or betrayed the American interests. I can give you dozens of examples where America sided with forces hostile to the Kurds. And I'm not justifying hostility toward America, but when the Kurds asked for political guarantees before joining any regional confrontation against the vicious Islamic Iranian regime, suddenly they are portrayed as the obstacle to Trump's strategy. We have already witnessed America abandoning the Kurdish allies in Western Kurdistan in Rojava. Do we not have the right to learn from the modern history? Do we not have the right to learn from our own experiences in the region? Why, when the Reza Pahlavi is allowed to publicly advise his supporters not to go on the streets for their own safety, but when the Kurds ask similar questions about protection, they are accused of hesitation or obstruction? Why should the Kurds ignore the possibility of chemical attacks, massacres, if they become involved in another conflict? Can anyone point a single clear statement from Trump or his administration guaranteeing the protection of Kurdish civilians if they come under direct threat or direct attack. For 40 years, the Kurdish youth, their men and women, have been dying in East Kurdistan, in Rojhelat, in Iran. And we have never seen a serious long-term commitment to protect the Kurdish population there.
Some are jumping in and they're saying that there are Kurdish groups who actually want the Iranian regime to survive.
That's absolutely false. This accusation we have heard even in Syria. Through the 14 years of civil war, the Al-Qaeda supporters were accusing the Kurds that they are standing with Bashar Assad against the Syrian people. And that's absolutely false. Kurds have fought Assad's regime, the father and the son, since 54 years. We are the only force in the region who fought extremism and jihad.
President Trump, he doesn't seem to like the Kurds, does he? And yet they were America's most loyal allies in Syria, and they helped to defeat ISIS.
There are deeply problematic figures around Trump and within parts of his foreign policy circle. People like Tom Barak, who have played a highly negative role in legitimizing and supporting the current jihadi-led authorities in Syria under the pretext of stability, while ignoring the long-term ideological threat of these factions and what they represent.
Well, let's talk about your personal experience. You were taken hostage by ISIS. You managed to live to tell the tale. What happened?
It helps to explain my background and why I speak about jihadi organizations like ISIS and Al-Qaeda with certainty and experience. I do not share the story just to revisit the past emotionally. I do it to clarify something important. I've lived and experienced being a hostage among these groups. I witnessed them personally, and I fully understand how dangerous they are, not only militarily, but also ideologically. I know their methods, their manipulation, the way of recruitment, and the way they market the jihad to the outside. I was captured by ISIS in December 2014 while working at a Kurdish TV station called Rudaw. When we were kidnapped, I was on the way to conduct an interview with an Arab official in the region. That official, along with his sons, subsequently joined the government of Jolani during the last attack on the Kurds. He abandoned the Kurds, and he was one of the only Arab officials supporting the Kurds, and he abandoned them in January this year. This explains their continued contact with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Indeed, it's quite possible that the news of our visit to their palace to conduct the interview was leaked from inside the palace, since only his son knew about the interview. Later, during the captivity, I heard from ISIS that the information was leaked from inside the palace. But I didn't want to believe it back then. I thought it's an attempt from ISIS to confuse us. The experience of being hostage lasted for 280 days, and that added a lot to my understanding to this jihadi organizations forever. This is why I say very clearly today, There is fundamentally no real difference in the ruling structure between ISIS and the current Syrian jihadi failed state. They share the same ideological and organizational DNA. The difference is mainly tactical, because ISIS was openly confronting the outside world, but Jabhat al-Nusra, which is Al-Qaeda official branch in Syria, later rebranded itself as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, led by Jolani, they chose another strategy, appease the outside world in order to dominate internally. And this is exactly what they are doing. This is their doctrine. We, the Kurds, we fought these organizations directly on the ground. We warned the world for years. We warned the European states. Me, myself, I wrote a book. We have warned, and we said we are experts in fighting this jihadis and this terrorism, because we paid the price in blood. But unfortunately, parts of the international community, especially Britain and the United States, chose to empower and to normalize these jihadi factions for short-term geopolitical calculations. That's their choice. They are free to make their own decisions, but they will also carry the consequences of those decisions in the future.
That's it. That's from Israel in 10. Subscribe using the link below. It just takes a few seconds. Goodbye.